is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Peter has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. It is so much more fun coming into work after the Mariners win. I know I've led the show with this before, but it really is. It's just my whole mood, my whole outlook on life is so much better. Coming off a win for the baseball team instead of the other way, and it was great. Nice win last night for them. They just got it over early. Kyle Seager, the big grand slam, and kept adding on. Nice night for Leak, and it's good to see. Mariners, as we said earlier, when you're going to play games against the teams like Toronto or Los Angeles, the Angels, the teams that are going to be in it with you until the end, those wins and series wins kind of count double. And if last week's loss to the Angels counts double, then this week's win on the road in Toronto, that counts double as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice with that 4 o'clock first pitch. It's not even the following morning. You get kind of a double dip.
It's true.
You get that late evening, about 7:30. Man, it just feels good.
It does.
Yeah, they're 8-2-2 and they're in their 12th series. They're 21-15. They're getting contributions from anybody and everybody in that lineup, seemingly 1 through 9.
They sure are. The biggest one, though, yesterday, coming from the guy we spent some time talking about and wondering when he was going to take fire.
The lefties, 1-2 to Seager, swing and a high fly ball deep into right center field. Hernandez going back to the one, he tracked to the wall. Get out the rye bread and mustard, Grandma. It is grand salami time. Kyle Seager with a grand slam with two outs here in the top of the first inning. Holy smokes, and the Mariners have taken a 4-0 lead over the Blue Jays. Kyle Seager with his fifth home run of the year.
Yeah, a couple things on that. One, always like to hear Rick paying homage to Dave Niehaus. That's two, right. Love to see Kyle Seager doing it against a lefty. And three, even more fun when that lefty is Jay Happ, which sort of stood out as one of those aggravating Jack Zarensic moves that didn't work and then worked for somebody else later.
Agreed.
And so everything about that was nice.
Yeah, I would add one more. You know, he thanks Grandma, and we should have probably opened the show with this. Happy Mother's Day, Lydia. You know, I mean, Mother's Day weekend
not a
and
mother.
Everything else. I know. Well, she's our mom. And I'm going to keep her in good spirits all
day. You think
day
that.
Today.
I don't
you
think
You always
that.
Keep me in yep. good spirits.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Yeah, and to my mom out there. You know,
I don't.
Yeah, how about to your moms and your wives?
Yeah, are you uncomfortable with that?
With you referring to Lydia as your mom? Yeah, I am, as a matter of fact.
She's everybody's mom. We're a show unit, Salk. It's everybody. And I think it was Kevin yesterday who, you know, had the argument with his sons. And last night, I'm sure Kevin stuck his chest out and put his chest out there and said, see, when Seager hits, they win.
Well, it's definitely true last night.
Sure was.
If he's going to drive in 5-6 runs a game, then yes, absolutely. They'll probably win most of those games. Here's what I like about the start of this year, Brock. They've set themselves up for something. They have not made the playoffs. They've got a battle on their hands, and they still have some holes in this team. But they have set themselves up here through the first 5 or 6 weeks of the year to make sure that the rest of the year really is meaningful for them. And if you buy into that theory that the first third of the year is all about finding out about your team, and then the middle half is about sort of fixing those things, and then the third half, is, you know, tinkering in the second half, and the third is all about going after it. They're nearly done with the first third of the year. They've got another couple of weeks before they're sort of into the next phase of this thing. And I think we've learned some things about the Mariners so far this year.
Is there any aspect of the start, Mike, and I think DePoto made this comment yesterday to Bob Gross and Tom, is there any aspect of this start that does not feel sustainable? Is there anybody out there right now that is so over their skis and you're saying, wow, that was nice. He carried him for a week or 2 weeks. In fact, if you look at Cano's numbers and how they're projecting, Nelly's numbers, how they're projecting, there's not anybody, maybe D. Gordon.
Yeah, from an offensive standpoint, not really.
Some of the stretches that D has been in, but they're a top 10 home run hitting team, they're a top 10 slugging team, and they're a top 10 team in many of the offensive categories.
Yeah, no, I don't think anything offensively seems unsustainable. I think Marco Gonzalez is going to continue to be a worry. I think a lot of the guys in that rotation, every time they take the ball, you're going to still have your worries, and the same is going to be true in that bullpen. So, yeah, it's not that it's not sustainable. All those things are, but are you going to bank on those things? Are you going to bank on all those pitchers being as good and winning some of the games that they've won, even when they haven't gotten great pitching performances?
But I would flip that around, you know, and just say, you're right, they've been a lot of that through the first 30-something games, and look where they are, you know? They're 8-2-2, and they're 21-15, and Marco hasn't been brilliant. The bullpen and Juan Acasio has been up and down, and I guess probably Eddie Diaz would be the one you would say is going to be the hardest project.
You're so much more worried about getting to Eddie Diaz instead of what he does. Yeah, I went through some of the things that I think I've learned so far about this team, Brock, and I know you've got some as well. But one of the ones that jumps out most to me, and we'll get you guys on the horn about this morning, 206-421-3776. Good time for you guys to call and talk to Mariners, especially at 7:30 this morning. But one of the things I've definitely learned is that having real threats at the top of the order is a difference maker. They've been going after the idea of the table setters for a while, getting two good on-base percentage, fast players at the top of their lineup that can put pressure on the other team before Cano, Cruz, and Seager come up for the last couple of years, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Right? It was one thing when you're trying it with Gerard Dyson or Leonis Martin or Ketel Marte, Ben Gamble. I mean, those guys all took their turn in the top two of this lineup along with Segura last year.
Yep.
And it just didn't feel right. Like, you say you're pressurizing the opponent, but you're not really when Gerard Dyson can't get on base enough. You say you're pressurizing the opponent, but not when Leonis Martin strikes out as much as he does.
Correct.
When you've got D. Gordon and Gene Segura at the top of your lineup setting the table, it's the definition of what Scott Servais said they want it to be. Difficult to play against. Yep. Those guys make it hard to play against hitting 1-2 in your lineup.
Yeah, they're all those other guys you mentioned were quasis. Right, they're kind of quasi leadoff hitter. They're kind of quasi.
Yeah, like they each had an element of what you'd like.
Exactly. But these are legit dudes right here. Yeah. You know, Daniel Jeremiah had a cool tweet. I think it was yesterday or the day before that. He just got done, right? Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network at Move the Sticks. Great guy. Great follow. Hopefully we'll have him on the show here again real soon. And he said, now is the time he goes back. This is pretty cool. He goes, now is the time where I go back and I watch the NFL top five at their position. I've done all this college scouting. He put his whole board together, all the evaluation, everything comparing all these college kids to one another. But he said, ultimately, now is the time where I want to once again set that gold standard. I want to look at what the five best free safeties and the five best NFL corners are doing before I start my work for the 2018-19 draft. Mike, in much the same way, D. Gordon is the gold standard for a leadoff guy. Right, this is there's no like quasi. This is a guy that steals bases. This guy that gets on bases. A guy that hits over 300. This has been a hits leader in the National League, as is Gene Segura. So those two things are quite real. And again, well, I think it's fairly sustainable.
Yeah,
you know, it's not some of those that you're exactly right. Had some of the parts that maybe you could project to do some of this or project to do some of that. Not the case with those two.
My second one is maybe a little bit in the weeds, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But they're going to need bullpen help. This bullpen, the way it is currently constructed, is not going to take them to October. They need bullpen help. And maybe James Pazos, who pitched really well again last night, maybe he ends up taking some higher leverage spots. We'll see. But if Nicasio can't be more effective than he is, they've got a major problem with their bullpen. It is not good enough right now to go to October.
Yes.
I mean, I'll just say it. They need bullpen help.
Yep.
Now, the best news is that's usually the easiest thing to find. Over the course of a season, the easiest thing to do is to reshape and rebuild a bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to need to do it in some way if they want to. Mark Zibchinski was awful again last night.
Jeepers creepers, he's struggling.
Yeah, he's really been bad.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, so look, between him and Nicasio and, you know, Vincent through all the innings he did last year, I know these are names that aren't familiar to every baseball fan out there. But just taken as a whole, that bullpen is not like 100% ready for October. Yeah. And I'm going to guess it'll be rebuilt in some fashion over the course of the year. I know you've been looking at Ryan Healy quite a bit as one of your big revelations.
Yeah, he is a revelation. So I'll come in, just ask Jerry.
Come back from the disabled list, he's been a bit of a revelation. Everything we thought he would be offensively and even more defensively, he's been terrific on the defensive side. Brings a shocking amount of energy to the field. You know, big power hitters don't ordinarily get associated with energizing a team, but Ryan's done that. And from day one, that's been D's role on this club. He's been the energizer and the catalyst.
I've been sitting there looking at him for a month now. I'm like, I know this guy. Who is this guy? I feel like I've seen him before. There's a lot of Mark Trumbo in him. Size-wise, 6'5", 225, they're both basically the same guy. They're big guys, and they're kind of, you know, and Healy has been more of an infielder guy, where Trumbo's a defensive liability. Yes, Healy's a much better fielder, but just from a swing, a compact swing, a lot of power, you just start to look at
their... Is he going to get on base as much as Trumbo?
That was kind of the knock, I think, on both of those guys a little bit. Trumbo was a little boom or bust. Yeah. Trumbo had popped one year in Anaheim with a ton of home runs.
Right.
And Trumbo was a guy that came here, and what did he do? And he gave a lot of credit to Edgar. he gave a lot of credit to just kind of sustaining some of his game and I don't know.
It's funny that Trumbo's the guy Jerry traded twice. And everybody thought Jerry hated Trumbo, and then he goes out and acquires his doppelganger.
Startling to look at their numbers.
Go figure. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you put it all together, and at what, 21-15, playing some good baseball. Making you happy in the morning. Making you happy at night. I love the feeling of waking up in the morning after a baseball win.
So do I.
It just smells better.
Happy Mother's Day.
We'll take some of your calls coming up here at 7:30. What have you learned so far about this Mariner team? 206-421-3776. Right now, need to know.
Need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Mariners are now 5-0-2 in road series. They take the series in Toronto with much-needed start from Mike Leake, who was very good through seven innings, and they just bashed the baseball. Kyle Seager, the early grand slam, another home run on top of that. Mike Zunino hit one of the longest home runs you will ever see. I know StatCast said 430. Mm-mm. No thanks. Mm-mm. That thing was absolutely pummeled to center field. They'll start a three-game set in Detroit tonight. First pitch, 4:10 p.m. pregame show here at 3 o'clock on 710 ESPN.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned at the top of the order it's real, and there's no question about that. And Gene Segura was awesome last night, and he's been great all season long. But, you know, we did start to talk about a lengthened lineup over the last few years, but nothing is like this. Nothing do you present to an opponent. I would love to be on the other side of it. You know, for the first time in some time, I would love to be, like, on the other side watching the Mariners come in and watching them. It would feel like some of these offenses we've seen in the past. Like, man, where is an easy out? Where is somebody that you can just somewhere in this lineup? There's got to be an easy out, and really there isn't. And there's such a mix of talent. These guys bashing the ball, four home runs, set the pace yesterday, and good for you, Kyle. Because if, Kyle, you get on one of these stretches, which you always seemingly do year in and year out for a couple weeks, that you get it going, this offense can put up even more runs and do more damage.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, speaking of that trip to Detroit, bench coach Manny Acta will manage the team for the next two games. Scott Service will miss two for his daughter's graduation at Ole Miss. Acta does have managerial experience with both Washington and Cleveland. Look, this is something relatively new in baseball, and I'm somewhat influenced by listening to Terry Francona and being around him when I was starting off my career as a reporter, and he has always, his whole life, regretted that he did not go, I think it was to the birth of one of his children.
Mm.
That his manager at the time, and I want to say it was Dick Williams, just kind of gave him that look like, yeah, you're not doing that. This is sport. This is your living. You're not taking some time off. And he's regretted it forever.
Mm.
And he would always talk about giving players that time off they needed for important events in their family, and that it wasn't a big deal in a 162-game season to give somebody a day or two that they might have had off anyway to go travel. I would say the same thing for Scott Service and for the manager. If there is something important in your life that goes that is bigger than the game itself, I think the modern-day version of baseball allows so much more for this to happen, and especially when you've got somebody with Acta's level of experience.
There you go. I think that nails it right there. And it's Manny Acta, and it's also this team. Right? We said yesterday that in 3 years of being around Scott, he's grown in the comfort, you know, of his job and in his skin of knowing this team. He liked this team. He liked this team more than anybody else did. Okay, True Serum came back from spring training for the first time in 3 years or 5 years that we've done that trip. I think I was more negative than ever. I was really concerned about this group. I didn't see it, but Scott Service did. I think he trusts a lot of the veterans on this team, and there is no doubt this coaching staff that's in place and Manny Acta next to him can handle the business so he can take care of the family business, which obviously trumps any level of baseball.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Interesting day at the VMAC yesterday. Pete Carroll and John Schneider provided depositions in the Colin Kaepernick case. Adam Schefter saying that Kaepernick and his attorneys took depositions in his collusion grievance from Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll and from John Schneider on Wednesday. The Seahawks, of course, had expressed interest in Kaepernick this offseason, but he no longer appears to be in their plans. We'll wait and see whether or not that happens. It'd be surprising, especially after they drafted Magoo.
Yeah.
Pete also had a pop psychologist in yesterday, which is causing people a lot of panic. It was a strange day over there.
All I know is, I don't know if you were like me, Saul, I was really curious, the presentation of those depositions. Did Pete Carroll slow down and measure every single word, or was it some of the pace and the speed that we get used to? And what was it, brother, dude, man, bud, pal? What was where was Schneider going with some of his pronouns? I think it'd been fascinating to study the tape of the depositions. We never will. And fascinating is exactly who this psychologist is from Toronto, Mike. I mean, outside the box, to say the least. You know, and that's Pete, always looking for new angles and new ways to attack his team and some of the messaging behind it.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know every single morning. We do that right at 7:10. As we said, about 15 minutes from now, we'd like to hear from you guys. What have you learned about the Mariners this year? This team seems to have captured. I was playing golf with a couple guys yesterday, and it's like, yeah, you know, I haven't really been into them in a while. Yeah, old management. I didn't like the old ownership group. But this year kind of feels a little bit different to me. And so, if that's the case, what have you learned that has sort of made you start to think some of those things or not think that? 206-421-3776. Dig into some of your calls after the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
I think we talk about this every year. You and my mom share a birthday. Happy birthday to Jane Salk and happy birthday to you, mom. John.
Yeah, 49, 50, 52, 51. I don't know. Whatever it is. Happy birthday, JC. Love
thank
it,
you.
Bro. Yeah. You love birthdays?
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. Gotta like it.
What happened yesterday with Pete and John with these depositions in the Kaepernick case?
Well, I mean, as they continue this crazy collusion case, the fact that, you know, Seattle was involved and wanted him, probably has been more involved than any other team, it was only natural that they would come back and try to interview Pete and depose John Snyder to kind of get their word. But, of course, why you didn't sign him and what led to all that stuff. And, again, it's that pain that I think continues to hurt Colin Kaepernick now to try to get back in the league, because I'm sure that Pete and John were professional about it, but they certainly didn't like it to take time out of their busy schedule to try to do this when, you know, they were the most interested team. But again, this is what Colin is pursuing right now, and so is Eric Reid of the San Francisco 49ers.
In this way, does it make it even harder for Kaepernick to get back in? So any team that talks to you is then going to get deposed?
Yes.
I mean, it seems like a really tough strategy to get yourself back in. Now, if you win the case, obviously things change a little bit. But in the meantime, anybody that even talks to you is going to have to be deposed.
I know. That's what I think, that he put himself in that position.
It's
and
tough.
I think it has made it tougher because, you know, if you call him, you know, they did the same thing in Baltimore. Baltimore came close to signing him a year ago and then didn't. And they're all deposed and, you know, as many owners as possible. And then some of the bad part about this, you know, they might have, and I don't think they did it with John and Pete, you know, may get your access to your cell phone and try to see if there's any text messages involved with this. Mm. And so that's the bad part about it. And I think it has made it harder for him to get back in the league.
When you've been asked on all the national shows and the radio shows that you jump on around the country, John, as to why do you think ultimately the Seahawks said no to Kaepernick? What do you think the answer is?
Well, last year it was because I think that when Pete interviewed him, he got the idea that he was more interested in being a starting quarterback than a backup quarterback, because that was the comment that he made the next day. Because remember, he interviewed him on, I think it was Thursday, and then on a Friday, Pete came out and says, well, I don't know, I get the feeling that he's wants to be a starting quarterback, which is only natural. But if you're going to be playing behind Russell Wilson, you're probably not going to be playing because he doesn't give you the opportunity because he stays on the field at all times. In this case, you know, whether, and of course, remember, this came out from Colin Kaepernick's side. They call, they ask, where do you stand as far as what you're going to do with the national anthem, and didn't have an answer. And, you know, whatever was the thought for Seattle, they said, okay, we'll get back to you. And they still show some interest, but not enough to really sign them. So, you know, they've been forthright and active involving it. But I think the big thing last year was because he wanted to be a starting quarterback. And then this year, it's just that, okay, we don't really need the distraction. Let us know when you figure out what you want to do.
This tweet really bothered me yesterday, John. I'm going to be honest with you. At 10:21 a.m. yesterday, Adam Schefter tweets, Nashville has emerged as the leading contender to host the 2019 NFL draft per league sources. Decision expected to be announced during the league's spring meeting May 22nd and 23rd in Atlanta. Nothing against Nashville. Great city. One of my favorite cities, actually. But why in the world cannot Seattle be a part of this thing? Philly. It's been Dallas. Yeah. Why can't Seattle? I think it would be a phenomenal city to host a draft. Super Bowl? I get it with the weather. A draft, I don't think there's any question Seattle would knock it out of the park.
Yeah, but they have to apply, and they haven't done it yet.
Why?
I
mean,
And that's the idea. You have to put your name in. And I know that the people downtown have interest in doing that. They have interest in trying to get a Super Bowl. But until that they can put some kind of a bid together, they're not going to get any consideration.
Well, who needs to put the bid in? The city of Seattle and their
Sports Authority.
The sports the interesting.
Yeah, because they have to do it. And that's the only way that you're going to be able to get in
It's not the Seahawks who bid.
No, Seahawks do not bid. They can assist, obviously, and try to help out. But no, it's up to whatever city is interested to be able to put the bid in, how they're going to do it. And until that happens, Seattle can't be a consideration.
See the story about Blake Bortles being a hero, John?
How about that?
Huh?
How strange is
how
that?
How about Blakey Boy on the doorstep of a Super Bowl run last year and now a hero?
A fairy. I mean, I'm proud
of
him.
What did he do?
He stopped an alleged car thief. That's what he did. Okay, he stopped a guy that was allegedly ready to break into a car, and Blake Bortles called the authorities and took care of business.
He called the authorities.
I guess he did.
Would you do that? Would you try to stop a car thief? Like, all right, so you steal a car. Like, whatever. I mean, somebody who's coming to commit violence in some way, at that point, you're a hero. Like, all right, you stole the car. Then you get insurance. For, like, the life moves on. Why would you care enough to do that?
Because I think you care about... Because, what, he was at a function, I guess, that had a lot of his teammates and friends all around there. And, you see that happening. I mean, hey, I give him credit for being able to step up and do it.
That's a
good move.
I don't know. That's a team party. You're a starting quarterback. You're more valuable than that car. If you get hurt trying to apprehend some car thief... Yeah, no.
Well, I don't know if he's out there and he's the the office linebacker. Well,
then
out there
what did he do? He made a call.
Yeah, he just made.
Well,
sure.
That's not a hero. Anybody can make a call. This story is bunk. I don't buy it at all, John.
You don't buy it. It's not true.
I'm not saying it's not true. I just don't know how heroic he really is.
Well, I thought it was a good move.
It's nice, I guess. John, rank these quarterbacks in terms of who you'd rather have moving forward: Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson, Derek Carr, Phillip Rivers.
I would say, because again, you still want to see more of Watson. Cam Newton, number one. Number two, we're not putting Blake Bortles in.
No, here, Watson, Carr, and Rivers.
Okay, so then Carr, number two. I'd say Rivers, number three, and Watson, number four.
Really? Mm. Man, my list, I think, would be completely the opposite for you. I think I would go Watson, Cam, Carr, Rivers. Mm.
Well, I think we still, Watson looks great, but we still need to see more of him.
Yeah, I know, but I don't need to see any more of Phillip Rivers. I'm all set with that. And with Derek Carr, I feel like he's gotten a lot of publicity for not actually accomplishing all that much.
He was part of a 12-game winning team 2 years ago. That was pretty good.
It was okay.
It's a good debate.
It's okay.
12 wins is not
kind
bad.
Of heroic.
How'd that team do in the playoffs?
Kind of heroic.
How'd that team do in the playoffs?
Seasons. You're hard to impress.
How'd that team do in the playoffs?
Remember who was not playing in the playoffs?
Him, exactly. He couldn't make it all the way to the end.
Okay, so.
That's on him. Brock always tells me that's on
you. It's on him getting hurt?
Yes, that's what Brock always says.
Maybe Blake could have saved him.
Brock, is that what you say?
I said he got to be available, but he had a pretty good year.
Wasn't available. Let's get to a wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
What wild card?
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday birthday edition.
Oh, no.
It's John Clayton's 21st birthday, but when his friends take him to a party hosted by James Franco, things get weird. Watch as Clayton gets in a fight with Vin Diesel, gets challenged to a drinking contest with Kristen Stewart, and gets dared to jump off a roof into a pool with Boy Howdy. Will Clayton make it out of this rager as the same John Clayton we all know and love, or will he be changed forever?
Wow.
Well, this one sounds like I'm going to be changed. I mean, first off, to think about me jumping off a house with you, that's going to be a scary. And then secondly, I mean, a little concerned about the extra drinking in that. That's not necessarily good. And so this one sounds like it's a changing party. It's like I think one where I think I'd rather have my usual quiet birthday as opposed to be doing this.
You have a favorite birthday that stands out through these years, John? Was your 21, your 40, was your 50? Was there any just milestone birthday for you?
Let's see. My wife, I had a party for me when I turned 40. So
wow. That must have been nice.
Yeah, was it 40 or 50? I can't remember.
Who can remember? Yeah. These things all blend together. John, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. What is the best movie, Howdy, or Lydia, or anybody back there, about a party? What is the best movie that has like a major feature, a big house party or something like that?
Well, that's a really good question.
Superbad has to be up there for me.
So you got Superbad. You got Animal House.
Animal House, great.
You got the Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Old School, you could maybe
absolutely
lump in there.
Old School. You got the Jennifer Love Hewitt movie. Yes, I Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh yeah, Can't Hardly Wait. What a throwback!
Right. That's actually what I was thinking about when Howdy was telling the story. That, and it's not a major part of the movie, but in Almost Famous, they go to that party, and he does jump off the roof into the pool. So
Tom Hanks, Bachelor or Bachelor Party?
Oh,
or something?
Absolutely. Yes, that is a really old movie. God, I remember seeing that in the 80s. All right, what do you guys, let's do this. We're going to take some calls, 206-421-3776. The question is fairly simple. What have you learned so far about the Mariners? They're, almost 40 games or so into this season. What have you learned so far about this team? What's one thing that you think you now know about the 2018 Mariners? 206-421-3776. We've got some more answers, and we'll take yours next. I'm Brock and Salk. No, he jumped. He jumped for sure because he loves music. That's from Almost Famous. My God, we got a lot of text messages here from the greatest party scene in a movie of all time. I mean, there's a lot of them. So, Lydia, what are you going with? Did you have a final answer on this? Was Can't Hardly Wait enough to sway you? Do you want to hear some of the other texts we've gotten in order to help you decide?
Sure,
what you
absolutely.
Think is best?
I think it's also important to note we said originally movie that revolves around a party. Now we're changing
it
to party scene.
Fair
so that's,
point.
That's a very different distinction.
Yeah, there aren't that many movies that actually revolve around a party, but I guess I meant more sort of a pivotal scene, right? Where like it's the big moment of that movie. So Can't Hardly Wait definitely falls into that category. Mm-hmm. A lot of people texting in with Days of Confused, which falls into that category and is a better movie. But the party itself doesn't seem to be as big a deal to that movie. Does that make sense?
Yep.
They were a little more dazed and confused.
Right. And plus it's what do they call it at the Moon Tower? A beer bash at the Moon Tower or a blowout at the Moon Tower? I forget what they call it. Some of the other Risky Business, big party at his house at the end of that movie. I get some friends actually texting me personally to add Risky Business.
Nice.
Tom Cruise in the early years. Let's see what else we've got. Superbad. A lot of people texting him with Superbad.
Yeah, that was my original answer. I think I probably have to go with that one.
Same idea, right? They're trying to get to that party, and the whole movie is about trying to get to this one moment. Is that your answer?
Yep.
Your answer is Superbad.
Yeah,
you don't
not?
Say it with a lot of confidence.
You know
there.
What? It was my first instinct, so let's just go with that.
Yep.
They say in Jeopardy, you've got to go with your first instinct.
And why are we talking parties?
Well, somebody says Die Hard because it's all happening at a Christmas party.
Wow. Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah, you kind of have to go with any Christmas party movie, any movie about prom. All of those fall into it. So now you got like 16 candles in the mix. You got like any movie that has a party. So
a bunch of people texted in with 16 candles.
Just open up a Pandora's box.
Yep.
Way to go, Howdy. You know, your Friday movie fictions always get.
What was your answer, Howdy? What do you think? What is the greatest party movie like that of all time?
I really enjoy Hot Tub Time Machine.
That's a good one. Do you consider that really a party, though?
I mean, the whole thing happens really at a party at that place. I mean, there's like only a quarter of the movie.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's fair. I'll go with that. Hot Tub Time Machine is an underrated funny movie. Yeah, it is. I really like that. Ashley, what do you got? Brock, I know, doesn't know any movies,
nope.
So we're not even going to ask. We're not even going to ask Brock to participate in this.
I've tried to pretend through lots
and
of these, yeah.
And I know none of the listeners have thoughts on the Mariners, so we can do this for the next 7 or 8 minutes while you guys don't call about what you've learned about the Mariners. Ashley, what do you have?
I've honestly never seen any of these movies.
None of them?
So, yippee,
hold
everybody.
On a second. Hold on a second. You've never seen Dazed and Confused?
Negative.
All right.
What about 16 Candles, Ash? You've never seen that one?
No.
Oh, it's
you've
okay.
Seen 16
All right.
Candles? What kind of girl are you?
Or person.
All right. Well, I don't know any girls who haven't seen 16 Candles. How about, you've never seen Animal House?
How about Cinderella?
I've never heard
That's
of that.
That's all about going to a party.
Cinderella.
All right. Here we go.
We're good. Lydia,
we're
you get me. Let's go.
Lydia, is that your answer, Cinderella?
I mean, sure.
Which version?
The original, obviously.
The original with the mice?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Gus, man. Great.
Gus.
Brock, any answer for you? You've had a while to think about this.
No.
Have you seen any of these movies?
Yeah, I've seen some of
them. Did you see American Pie? That's of your era.
There you go.
Especially American Pie 2, big
I think
party.
There's no question about that. There you go. Let's go American Pie. That's my answer.
If you could just extend the volleyball scene in Top Gun as a party, that would be it.
If I just said any movie there, would you have agreed that that was your favorite party scene?
Yes, Animal House was a great one. That was funny. Belushi was good in that one. American Pie, for sure, my era. You know I like old school. You know, so you're my boy, Blue. So I got all of them. Let's just keep it rolling.
I appreciate it. All right. 206-421-3776 is the number. We do have one person who's learned something about the Mariners this year. It's Steven in Pasco. Good morning, Steven. Steven?
What's happening?
Hey, what's happening? Well, first a prediction. I think the Mariners' win yesterday was the beginning of a 10-game win streak.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Wow. Love that.
And the reason being, this team is having a lot of fun playing together. It starts with D. Gordon. He's bringing an energy to that clubhouse, but it's not just him. It's everybody on the club. They're out there. They're having fun. They're not a perfect ball club. They make mistakes sometimes in the field. Sometimes they drop games you think they're supposed to win, but then they come back the next day and they beat a pitcher that everyone thinks they're going to lose to. And they did it in Cleveland, too. I mean, they're beating pitchers that they're not supposed to beat, and they're out there having fun. And I think they also believe in the management. We get near the middle of the season with all this winning, that they're going to go out there and get the bullpen help and the pitching they need to go down the stretch and do something.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jerry DePoto was
in the management.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Jerry DePoto was on yesterday with Bob Gross and Tom, and I would say he very much agreed with your assessment there.
This group, 1 through 25, is as good a group as you'll be around. And, you know, you guys spend time over at Safeco and get the opportunity to just be around these guys. They like each other. They work hard. They're fun. They get along very well. And, you know, when you have that kind of synergy and you feel that kind of sync with your teammates, it makes it so much fun to go out and play. And I think that's why you're seeing this team show as much resiliency as they're showing. They bounce back.
Was it the Macho Cuatro? Was that Lloyd's, one of Lloyd's years?
Yes.
Right? And that was a real thing. You could tell those guys all enjoyed each other. There's Fernando thrown in with Felix and Robbie and Nelly, but it really is more than that with this group. Not only Salk, is it the legitimacy that we talked about to open the show of the guys at the very top setting the table, but it's not just about three or four guys. And I do think the revelation has been a nice mix. I think Mike Zunino being a real leader of this team and owning that opportunity and taking kind of the onus to say, yeah, man, I'm the catcher, but I'm more than that. And you feel his comfort, and it truly is deeper. But I know, and I'm with a lot of these folks, you know, it's going to take 100 games. It's not going to take 40 games.
Yeah, there's a texter here that says, one thing I've learned is that the playoffs don't start until September at least.
That's
right. Understood. No one is saying that this team's a playoff team. Just what do you think you actually know about them? I think I know that Mike Zunino is kind of for real. I think we now know what kind of player Mike Zunino is. He's going to hit a ton of home runs. He's got ridiculous power. And thankfully, his walk rate has kind of gone up a little bit this year, it looks like. So his on-base percentage isn't horrible, and the power's great. But do you realize Mike Zunino's hitting under 200?
Yeah, no, I don't.
It is so strange. I looked that up last night. I was like, he's got to be hitting 230. No? He's only hitting 196 after a couple of hits last night. It doesn't.
No.
Now, his season's been a little shorter, and that's still variable in a short season, so we'll see where it ends up. I really would love for him to hit 240. And if he can hit 240, he might be the best catcher in the game. Or certainly right there. As Yadier Molina starts to age out of having that honor, which he's had forever and ever.
He's got some bigger issues.
I understand. Yes.
It's going to be a little while for him.
He's going to be fine. He posted yesterday that he's up walking around. It's great to be walking up without any pain.
Surgery, correct?
And he said, okay, a little bit of
emergency surgery, correct?
Emergency surgery.
If Mike Zunino can hit 240 and do everything else that he does now, he's arguably the best catcher in the game, or he's certainly in that conversation with a few other guys. So that's another thing I think I've learned so far. Let's grab Chris, who's in Silverdale. Chris, what have you learned so far?
Morning, guys. I learned, finally, for once, we have a ball club that has some grit behind them. For so many years, I didn't see them mentally in the game, and now we have from top to bottom guys that are gritty. When they take a loss, they come back with a chip the following day, and I haven't seen that for a long time from a ball club in Seattle like that. There's a lot of grit, a lot of heart, a lot of passion, and they're bringing it on the field on the diamond day in and day out. It's good to see again as a fan.
Do you think this team is extra gritty, Brock?
I think this team actually has energy in it, and they're not afraid to show it. Grit is a tough one. I think the optics, we talk about this all the time in baseball, when you're hitting, when you're winning, everybody has a blast. It's the life of the party. There's tremendous synergy. Guys enjoy each other. I think it makes it a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
But I do think you know, through the entirety of spring training and the first couple months of this season, that D's energy is real. That Ryan Healy actually likes being here, that he wants to be here. A guy that, you know, grew up in California. Goldsmith was sharing the story the other day on the air and went to Oregon for a reason, like the Pacific Northwest. Oh, my gosh. I got a legit team. I'm not in the dump of Oakland. I got some Hall of Famers all around me. There's going to be an opportunity to do some serious damage at the bottom of this lineup. I think he legitimately enjoys being here.
Yeah.
And I do think Mike Zunino is an enormous X factor in this. That he is like confidently the catcher, and like I'm good, man, and I can play this game at a high level. So I think all of those really positive energies.
It helps having veterans at what, eight positions on the field at any given time, short of left field. I mean, that's generally what they're going to run out there every single night. I'm not quite comfortable saying grit yet. They've had a couple of comebacks. I think we've seen those before. That's not the first time in the last 5 years the Mariners had some good comebacks.
Undefeated on the road in these rubber matches, though.
I think that matters. And the fact that
series?
And that, I think, springs from the energy to kind of keep it going every day on the road, especially. Kind of see where this goes. We'll take more of your calls a little bit later in the show. Before we do so, Coors Light's Blue 42. The Seahawks had a great player in for a visit. Is he somebody they'll sign? Brock will tell you next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42. Don't tell me. I'll get in there. I don't mind. Circuit breaker. I'll get into the circuit breaker. Don't you remember a few years ago when I had to change a circuit?
Do you feel like if we like recorded our in between segment conversations and podcast them?
No.
It could be kind of interesting.
I don't think that our marriages or our friendships would survive. That's what I think. Certainly not your sterling reputation.
Oh, please.
Question number one.
Please.
If you want to win in college football, Brock, you better pay your coaches. How's UW doing in that department?
Remarkably well, and give credit once again to Jen Cohen. Like, we don't do that enough. Jen's made some tremendous head coaching hires. Do you realize that UW's salary pool, and I pulled this right from an article from Adam Jude, who was talking about Jimmy Lake and his seven-figure salary defensively. UW's salary pool in 2018 is set to be just under $5.5 million. That's just for their assistants. Chris is going to make north of four, which would rank number five nationally based on last year's figure. So everything isn't out, and it won't be in quite in the top five because, you know, those boys in the SEC continue to ramp it up year after year after year. But Alabama's at $5.99 million. They're number one, followed by LSU at $5.9 million, just under that. Clemson, $5.7 million, where Howdy and I were at hanging out. In Michigan, it's 5.8, but you are right there, man. You are right in the mix. If you're going to compete with the big boys and you're going to go after them, you have to keep your staff together. I've given Chris Peterson an immense amount of credit. It is so outside the realm that somebody on your staff, Pete Kwiatkowski, would take a step down from calling defensive plays but want to stay on that staff to elevate somebody else, Jimmy Lake, to do that. I mean, it just does not happen. It's a whole lot easier to do so when you're making serious coin. Both of them are, and their entire staff is. And I think it's a big reason why they've stuck together and why they've had the kind of success the last 4 years.
All right, question number two. Wide receiver Brandon Marshall was in for a visit. What are the Seahawks going to do? Will they sign him?
Yeah, I don't think so. I'd be really surprised. I can almost confidently say that's just not going to happen. I said yesterday, you bring him in, you absolutely kick the tires. They believe that there's enough football left and savvy and game and talent, but just does the body work? You know, and are there enough reps?
Are there enough reps?
I was talking to you about just the number of work days in the calendar year for these guys. Season ends to training camp, there's 180 days. If you're an all-star and you're at every voluntary workout, there's less than 35 days where you're in the building working. In fact, there have been studies that have been done, Salk, as far as the number of reps. And I hate to do this and be like, well, in my day. But in my day, we started March 12th in meetings. March 12th, we had multiple mini camps, multiple practices. And in fact, it would take 3 years under the current deal for guys to do what we did in one. When it comes to the amount of reps and how precious those reps are, like you've got to get your work in. And there just are not enough reps to take a flyer on some of these guys. There just isn't. I need it for Jerron Brown. I need it for Tyler Lockett. I need it for my young guy. I can't share those reps. There aren't enough of them. And you get in training camp, it's the same deal. So I think because of that, Brandon Marshall will not be a Seahawk.
All right, question number three. Everybody excited about the future for Shaquem Griffin, of course. When he first gets into the league this year, even in preseason, where do you think he will shine initially? Will it be rushing the passer? Will it be stopping the run as a linebacker or more of a pass coverage guy?
Yeah, I think it will be the coverage element of it. Now, he'll get to pick on some sloppies in the preseason as a pass rusher, and it won't surprise me if he gets a sack or two or three, you know, depending on how much they blitz him or how much they utilize him. Against the elite tackles in this game, it's going to be harder. I think where his game will transition the easiest will be in that zone coverage. You know, Scott Frost talked to us about that. He even saw him as a safety coming into the box and playing, you know, some of the curl, flat, hook zone, some of the different spots and have an ease of doing so. You know, just looking at his collegiate numbers, Pro Football Focus on the college level also studies these guys. And his ability to cover people outside the box is one of the top 10 linebackers in college football. So I think, you know, when you jump nearly 25 feet, when you run 4-4, when you have his body type, I don't think you'll have any problems playing in space. It'll be a little bit more in that box with all the congestion where there's going to be room for his game to grow.
All right, there you go. That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. All right, still getting tons of texts about parties. Movies with parties. A lot of people saying we missed House Party, obviously. PCU came up as well. There have been a ton that have been
Neighbors generated. Came up too. I think that's a pretty good one with the big party scene.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. That's
I have seen
new,
that.
Right? Oh, there you go. All right, Ashley.
Yes.
There you go. Neighbors.
Neighbors.
For the win.
Neighbors.
Neighbors.
Were
for
you
the
just kind of working your craft as well, studying kind of the Puyallup thing? Is that Ashley? Just didn't have time for movies, right? It was school and sports.
Which of those parties would you want to be at?
Of all of those movies?
Of all the movie party scenes.
Is there a movie about studying, like a study party?
A study
That's
hall.
That's the one I would be
yeah,
at.
That
like maybe
fun.
Like Breakfast Club.
Mm, yeah. You are a wild woman.
Dead Poets Society, does that count?
Yeah, Dead Poets Society. Yeah, that would be really fun. Mm. You want to be at that one. All right, which party would you actually want to be at? Who knows?
Here come a million more times.
I know. Let them loose. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Hey, we're going to talk to one of our favorite people coming up. I love this. We're going to talk to Joel Klatt from Fox Sports. Does a great job calling college football games, talk a little Seahawks draft, talk about where the college football game is at, what we should be expecting this year. Love talking to him. We'll do it next. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.